Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is Thursday, May 6, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Jobless Claims Below GFC. GFC as in the Great Financial Crisis. This is something we have been monitoring here very closely over the past year. And I have stated many times on the record that I was not going to claim that jobless claims were down until we actually got below level seen during the depths of the Great Financial Crisis. And back then, during 2008, 2009, that number peaked at 660,000. And it lingered there, range-bound, for a couple of months. Well, unfortunately, given the pandemic, the lockdowns, the restrictions, all man-made, of course, we were far north of that 660,000 figure. And that was a catastrophic figure in and of itself. Again, during the GFC, one of the worst economic and financial environments we have witnessed since the Great Depression of the 1930s. So just to put that into perspective. The other thing that we always wanted to look at too was obviously that apples to apples comparison, because when we're talking about initial jobless claims, we're talking about at the state level. Well, here, where we are today, thanks to the Nobody Cares Act 1.0, they created the PUA program, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. So there was another program that needed to be calculated to actually get that aggregate number to see how many people on a weekly basis were filing for an initial claim. That number, the PUA figure, is routinely left out of the discussion on the mainstream media. They just simply want to give you that headline number out of the Department of Labor that talks about regular state unemployment benefits. But because of the severity of everything, the federal government created the PUA. They also created some other programs, but those aren't counted on a weekly basis. We do give the grand total of the aggregate number, and of course we'll get to that here momentarily, but I just wanted to let the audience know it is now, in aggregate with regular state unemployment and the PUA program combined, is finally below that 660,000 figure. So that's good news. That's what we want to see. These are not newly created jobs. These are jobs that were lost due to the lockdowns and are coming back because of the reopenings. And of course, we continue to see a lot of the struggling there, with especially with small businesses, getting people back into the workforce because Uncle Sam is competing with them, because Uncle Sam is sending them checks. So people don't want to necessarily go back. And that was predictable. And given some circumstances, perhaps understandable, but there's no doubt about it that it was predictable, and a lot of people saw this coming. It's something we discussed here many times before, and now it is actually taking place. So we'll get to that report here momentarily. A couple other things I want to get to before we get to market performance and some other data that we typically do here on Thursdays. We've been talking recently about the price of lumber and what the price increase has done to the average build cost of a new home, now $36,000. Just because of the price of lumber, we see that massive increase, and the price of lumber continues to climb higher, as does the price of copper and other construction and building materials. But one thing that I did not discuss, but have meant to, but just we talked about so many other things, is the importance, perhaps, of the insurance market on real estate or any other type of building, for that matter, that is constructed with lumber or any other type of building material, which would basically be all of them. So how many individuals, homeowners, how many businesses are currently underinsured because the price of these materials have gone up? So if you should end up in a situation where you have a total loss on your property, how much is that insurance company going to give you? Is it going to be enough to get you back to where you were, to make you whole again? That's the whole purpose of insurance, to make you whole again. That's what you're paying for. But it has to be rooted in what is written within your policy. So that might be a big problem if people are not calling up their insurance agents and saying, oh, hey, And, you know, obviously you might live in a region that might be more susceptible to some sort of natural disaster, maybe somewhere where it's more earthquake prone or major fires or hurricanes, tornadoes, what have you. And if something should happen, are you going to be properly reimbursed? That's a serious question. And we're already dealing with a situation within the financial markets, and insurance companies most definitely fall within that bucket, who are struggling to really make a lot of money because of this low interest rate environment. They cannot make money in the bond market because these bonds are yielding nothing. In real terms, they're negative. Even on the short end of the U.S. Treasury curve, they've dipped into negative territory from time to time. So these companies aren't making any money. That's why you're seeing your premiums go up. Plus, with all of the damage that has been taking place with some of these recent earthquakes and other natural disasters and fires out in California and elsewhere, well, they got to spread the love to everybody else, not just to the people in Florida or Georgia or the Carolinas or California. You live there. It's your risk. Your premiums should go up, not people all over the country, but they're spreading it all over the place. We got a lot of things to deal with here, but that's something to be mindful of, is what might happen if you have these types of events occur. And then nothing goes straight up. So then if we should witness some sort of collapse within the price of some of these commodities that have been just skyrocketing, well, now you're going to run the risk of being overinsured and now you're paying too much. And so you're going to have to get on the phone again and readjust and readjust. So there's a lot of things to consider out there when this happens. Another thing I want to mention here briefly was a tweet that came across my thread the other day, yesterday, from Fox Business financial journalist Charlie Gasparino. And this was more politically based, and he is stating in his tweet that according to some of his sources within the GOP, that the Republican strategy for the midterm elections next year is to basically give the Democrat Party a lot of rope to hang themselves. They want to spend, spend, spend. Let them spend, spend, spend. We're not going to get much in the way. And then their argument's going to be, look how crazy everything is. Look how out of control the Democrats are. Look how destructive everything has been. You know, I can understand the logic behind that strategy, if that is what they actually choose to employ. There's no guarantee that that's what they do. I also have no doubt that that is something that's probably being discussed. The question is that actually what they actually go with? We're going to find out. But the problem I have with it is the midterm elections are not for another 18 months. That's an eternity. Compared to what we have gone through since 2020 and what we continue to go through in 2021, 18 months from now, that's an eternity. That's a lifetime with what we have been dealing with. And my concern here is giving the Democrats rope, it's not just going to be the Democrat Party's neck in that rope, it's also going to be the neck of this country. Because we are just starting to really see the adverse and negative side effects of these out-of-control politicians and central bankers. You know, we still got a little bit of a sugar rush, a sugar high that we're dealing with right now. Again, as I like to say, let me print a few trillion dollars and I'll show you a good time too. But this party is going to end. This drunken stupor is going to end, and we're going to wake up with a massive hangover. This drug high is going to wear off, and we're going to suffer serious, massive withdrawals, okay? The other side of this is not going to be pretty. And the further along we go, the more evident it is going to become how destructive these policies are and remain to be. And if they continue to push more into the system, which they are going to do, we know for a fact that the Federal Reserve at a minimum is going to continue to throw liquidity into the system. But for all intents and purposes, it is very likely that the Democrats are going to continue to push more too. They want infrastructure, and you might actually get some bipartisan support on that if it is written in a manner that can get enough Republican support. So that's quite possible. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a massive multi-trillion dollar program in one lump sum bill, but they could piecemeal it. They could do a few hundred billion there, a few hundred billion here, and before you know it, we're in the trillions again. And then also don't forget that we have to contend with another debt limit increase. So look at that. You know, we're north of $28 trillion, and they're going to have to say, look, we got to increase the debt limit once again. But there's no problem to see here, folks, right? That's what they want you to believe. So let's get to some market performance, and we'll get to some of these other reports. So Forex markets, we have the dollar index at 90 spot 86. Not too much movement in the markets right now, although the U.S. dollar is weakening against the Chinese yuan by about 0.2%. Bitcoin is currently in the red, trading at $55,600 a coin. Wall Street continues to march higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average making, you know, new highs once again. Why not? Well, you know, the narrative of the day is what good news we got with the initial jobless claims number. And as I have stated here many times before, there is no such thing as good news or bad news or terrible news. There is only fantastic news. There is only great news, because we saw terrible, terrible weekly jobless claims figures week in and week out, and we continued to see the stock market continue to make new all-time highs. Okay? Because the market, their rationale, and it has been for a while, is, well, if we get a beat, if we get a better than expected number, well, then everything's good, everything's coming back, so let's rally. And if it's bad, well, then that just means that Uncle Sam's going to print, spend, borrow for more money, that the Fed's going to throw more money into the system, print it out of thin air. Let's rally. The stock market has basically turned into a perpetual money-making machine, and that, of course, is not what the stock market is. So this is going to end badly. It's going to end in tears, because these markets are completely rigged, distorted, and manipulated. And we know that a lot of these markets are manipulated by a lot of other banks and trading firms, because we see the documents when it comes to the deferred prosecution agreements. Get a smack on the wrist. Nobody gets fired. Nobody goes to jail. The shareholders have to pay the fine. And round we go. So they're doing it in our faces, but nobody wants to say anything. Overnight futures market, we have the Dow Jones flat. The S&P 500 is up about 0.1%. The NASDAQ 100 also in the green, up about 0.3%. Cash trade in Japan is in the green, up about 0.1%. A sea of green across the pond in Europe today, but nothing too big of a gain in Europe, but it's still all up. Cash trade in Australia also in the green, up about 0.3%. So it's just a green day all over the place. With commodities, they pulled back during the day session, but oil is up overnight right now. We have WTI at $65.14 a barrel. Brent, $68.54, but still flirting with that 70 handle. And I do anticipate that it will breach that 70 handle and march higher over the course of this spring and summer, if not further. Gasoline, $2.12. Gold and silver. We got gold at $1,819 an ounce. Strong day for gold today, and strong day for silver at $27.42. As I stated yesterday, I wanted to see gold get above $1,800. We busted through it. Hopefully it holds here. And if it does, I think we can move much higher. Silver, I said the same thing. I wanted to see silver breach through 27, really above 28. And if it can hold there, then we got a lot of space to the upside. So those things are moving up. Copper hitting an all-time high, $4.66 per pound. No problem, right? That copper doesn't go into housing. Copper is not going to be a material that everybody's going to have to pay for when it comes to all these massive infrastructure projects. And copper is not going to be needed for all of these electric vehicles. Of course, I am being sarcastic, and all of this is going to do is continue to put upward pressure on all of these items. So people aren't going to be able to afford these green vehicles, because it's not just copper that's going in them. It's lithium, which is going up. It's nickel. It's aluminum. It's silver. It's all of these materials. The plastics, well, where do plastics come from? Oh, that's right, oil. Where are all of these other metals and other materials come from? Oh, that's right, we have to mine them. What is one of the biggest things that environmentalists are against? The mining industry. But we're going to have to do more mining to get all of these quote-unquote green vehicles, yet they can't connect the dots. The stupidity is beyond me, but this is what we're dealing with. And then lumber is at $1,645 per 1,000 linear board feet. We continue marching higher with the price of lumber. So don't be surprised. The next time we get a report from the National Association of Home Builders that lumber is adding $40,000, $45,000, maybe even $50,000 in additional cost to the new home build. We're likely going to get there. And then to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.57%, so we remain range-bound on the 10-year note. Department of Labor, initial jobless claims report for the week ending May 1st. Seasonally adjusted claims came in at 498,000. Last week's figure was revised upward by 37,000 to now stand at 590,000. Non-seasonally adjusted figures came in at about 505,000. For the week ending April 24th, continuing claims on a seasonally adjusted basis came in at 3.69 million, a week-over-week increase of 37,000. Non-seasonally adjusted basis came in at about 3.8 million. On the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program for the week ending May 1st, that figure comes in at 101,000, a week-over-week decline of about 20,000. So in aggregate, we are at, well, let's just right below 600,000, which again takes us below where we were during the depths of the Great Financial Crisis. So that's what we want to see. That's good. People are getting their jobs back. Let's see if this trend continues. Of course, I am concerned that this is just a sugar high, and we're going to have to deal with the reckoning on the other side of this. In the aggregate for the week ending April 17th, recall this number lags by a couple of weeks, taking into consideration regular state, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, the PUA and PEUC programs, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and work share gives us a grand total of 16.2 million. So 16.2 million is a week over week decrease of about 405,000. The biggest declines were seen in the PUA program, a decrease of 112,000. In the PEUC program, a decrease of about 222,000. With 16.2 million, that gives us a de facto unemployment rate of about 11.6%. So we've been about twice the official rate here for quite a while. The official rate, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is 6%, so we're still flirting with being twice the official rate. And, of course, tomorrow being the first Friday of the month, we are going to get the official jobs report, and there are some expectations that we might see a 1 million jobs, quote-unquote, created. Again, these aren't new jobs. These are jobs that are coming back due to the reopening, okay? If that's the case, will markets rally on that number because, you know, that's great news? Or are they going to be concerned, right? Or now are they going to start being concerned? Are we now going to start entering a period where maybe there is good news and bad news and not just great and fantastic? And what I mean by this is going to start boxing in the Federal Reserve, and they're already trapped like rats as it is. If they got this type of quote-unquote recovery underway, and a million jobs have come back, then why do you continue to throw $120 billion into the system? Why are you continuing with this policy of quantitative easing? Housing prices are at all-time highs. Why do you continue to purchase $40 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities? Everything seems to be fine. Why do you keep doing this? The patient's okay. We don't need the medicine. Stop giving them drugs. The legs have healed. We don't need crutches, right? If everything's great, so what is their story going to be? How much longer are they going to be able to run with this narrative before everybody and their mother says BS? System exhaustion, ridiculousness squared. You can't do it anymore. Again, it doesn't have to be an exogenous shock. It doesn't have to be a geopolitical event. It doesn't have to be war. It doesn't have to be any type of conflict that causes markets to turn south. It could be system exhaustion. Or it could be credit risk somewhere. It could be a margin call, like we saw with Archegos a few weeks ago. Major global banks suffered several billion-dollar losses each because of one family office, hedge fund, whatever you want to call them. I don't care. They don't know what's going on. The regulators, this is building up within the system. That was another shot across the bow. We have seen these types of events before. These are the dominoes that are set. These are the dominoes that are starting to fall. And when they start their chain reaction, look out below, because we're not going to be able to stop it. Because their solution is really the disease here. All of this liquidity, all of this new debt, that's the disease. That's the problem. That's not the cure. That's what's causing all of these distortionary effects throughout the markets. That's what's creating zombie corporations left and right. That's what's propping up the zombie corporations that were already here before. And one of the reasons I always go back to the zombie corporations and relay this report, the initial jobless claims report, back to the Great Financial Crisis, is because we are still dealing with the effects of the Great Financial Crisis. That was market forces attempting to cleanse the system of all of that junk, all of that garbage, all of those distortionary effects, all of the malinvestment that was built up within the system. But we said, oh no, we can't do that. And these geniuses came up with quantitative easing. They changed some accounting rules. And then off to the races we went. We never allowed for a true full cleansing of all of the malinvestment during that time period. And that's why we continue to, and that's why we did experience such anemic growth through the Obama administration, all 8 years, and even through the Trump administration, because there was no deviation. There was no big shift in the trend to GDP. But we got a lot more debt, don't we? Got huge deficits, don't we? Twin deficits are blowing out. Budget deficit, trade deficit. Terrible. So you have to understand that we are still fighting the effects of the Great Financial Crisis. And we now have to contend also with this pandemic, these man-made lockdowns and shutdowns via government decree, which just completely decimated the global economy, decimated and destroyed so many small businesses. Now, again, you have to understand that a lot of these small businesses, even mid-sized and even some large corporations, should have gone out of business. They shouldn't have been in business. But that's what happens when you have this low rate, interest rate environment. This is what you have. You can survive. You can beg for some money and you'll get it. But it's not real and it's not healthy for the longevity of this economy, or any economy for that matter. Because zombies are not unique to the U.S. They are global. And when interest rates start to move up, either because central banks, major central banks, start to see the writing on the wall and they say, okay, well, we got to combat some of these inflationary pressures, whatever, or the markets do it, it's going to prick one bubble after the next. The weakest hands and the weakest links are going to go first. That's going to be a lot of these zombies. About 25% of U.S. corporations, no matter the size, are classified as zombies. How many jobs is that? How many jobs are going to be lost almost immediately? Because they can't afford to pay their debt. They're going to have to restructure. They're going to liquidate. They're going to go out of business. We are far from out of the woods. We still have to deal with the moratoriums and the forbearance programs that are in place. And we talked about that yesterday because one federal judge shut down the CDC's eviction moratorium and said, no, this cannot stand. Again, it wasn't so much that ruling. It was just the fact that we still have to contend with all of this. Far from out of the woods. But the spin doctors on CNBC and Fox Business and Bloomberg and the Democrats and the Republicans and people within the White House and people in Congress and people in the Federal Reserve, they're just going to say everything's perfectly okay. But the Fed has to be very careful about that, because if everything's okay, then why do you continue to do what you're doing to the degree that you're doing it? And of course, they can't give you an answer to that. And we saw some of that finally last week, was it, during the conclusion of the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. And Jay Powell, the chair of the Fed, he just couldn't answer some of these questions. Couldn't do it. He's not used to being asked tough questions. And these aren't even that tough. This is just common sense, some basic observations. Can't do it. That tells you how fragile the system is. Just like when Dingbat Yellen said, well, interest rates might go up in the future. And we saw the market sell off. We can't even talk about, we cannot even have this conversation about interest rates going up without the markets throwing a tantrum. That is not a strong, solid foundation, ladies and gentlemen. And these actions, as far as I'm concerned, with what has been taking place at the federal level and via monetary policy, is unethical, immoral, and un-American. But people don't care, because as long as the stock market appears to be a perpetual money-making machine and their 401k accounts keep going up, the retirement accounts keep going up, they don't care. They don't care if they're losing their country and the soul of this nation as a result. They couldn't care less, but everybody will when this house of cards comes tumbling down. And when that happens, it's going to be too late. Federal Reserve's balance sheet is nearing an all-time high. $7.81 trillion is the most recent figure. $7.81 trillion, a week-over-week increase of about $30 billion, and just $10 billion shy of the all-time high that we saw just a couple of weeks ago. This is continuing its trend in what we have been witnessing over the past, past year. Just continuing to make all-time highs or nearing all-time highs, committed to purchasing at least $120 billion per month in U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. That'll take the Fed's balance sheet to about $8.5 trillion at least by the end of this year. And if the Democrats in Congress just continue to get away with fiscal murder, then we might be closer to $10 trillion by the end of the year. And we still got several months between now and the end of the year. Anything can happen. So if there should be some sort of big market sell-off, or if there is some sort of exogenous shock to the system, or even internally, and we reach some sort of point of exhaustion, then the Fed will probably attempt to come to the rescue and inject even more liquidity. They're not afraid to do it. They don't really need anybody's approval. Of course, and politicians aren't going to say no. They love this crap because they don't have to take responsibility. Again, leadership, responsibility, and accountability are off the table. So if we can continue to just quote-unquote inflate our problems away, that's exactly what our government and central bank will continue to do. And it is extremely costly, especially to younger generations, because their opportunities are literally being stolen from them. So all that crap in the future can be pulled forward to today so we can pat ourselves on the back and make things look better than what they actually are. Again, this is going to end in tears when it's all said and done. So that's the podcast for today. Tomorrow, the official jobless claims report number. We will go through that report in its entirety as we have been since the past year. And I hope you join me for that, and hopefully we learn something informative about it. And I will have to do a deeper dive into some of those figures as well, because we don't just want to talk about the headline figures. We want to go deeper into some of those more structurally important numbers within that report and even outside of that report when it comes to employment. And of course, we'll have some questions for the Federal Reserve, regardless of what number comes out of the jobs report tomorrow. So stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kuraitis. Godspeed.